Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Joe Biden today had his first phone call with the Ukrainian president. And, you know, my first thought was, I don't even really care what they talked about. How much are you going to put down that this doesn't get him impeached? That was my first thought. And how this is such a non-story that our president's going to actually have a conversation with a foreign leader that's not going to be a national embarrassment. That's where I want to start off today with our big panel. I have asked our good friend Karee Pennebaker to come talk with us, gun violence survivor, every time survivor fellow, also treasurer of the DNC's Black Caucus. Karee, thanks for being here. Richard Ojeda, former West Virginia State Senator, presidential candidate, and currently the executive national spokesperson for No Dem Left Behind. Richard, thanks for being here. And also Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. Guys, thanks so much for being here.
Good morning.
So let's start with the phone call. Let's start right there. Do you see an impeachment coming out of this phone call?
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong when world leaders are having are actually communicating. It's a good thing. And once again, you know, this is not nothing under the table type event. So I think it's outstanding.
It's the president doing what the president does. Karee, you got a thought? I think your microphone's off. Nobody can hear you.
Yeah. I think this is another example of what it looks like to have an adult back in the room, where you don't have to worry about, one, the news coming out of that conversation, and two, is he going to say something that might be impeachable, or three, is he focusing on his own interests rather than the country's interests? And I think this is just another example of how starkly different Joe Biden is than what our current, what our former occupant of the White House used to be.
Republicans will act like, right, they're going to act like it's impeachable, whatever he did, because I'm guessing it was not pro-Putin. And so, like, they're going to talk about, he needs to be impeached because there's a quid pro quo here, because he's doing diplomacy for the United States of America, because he wants to send troops there. He wants to work with NATO to make sure that the rest of Ukraine is not invaded. So, I mean, like, I think Republicans will cry foul just because they cry foul about everything.
Because they've got nothing else to say. But again, this is what being presidential looks like. This is what being a leader looks like. Also, today the president was asked if he was going to take credit for the 916,000 jobs that were created in March. And he said, no, that's the American people. And again, it's what a leader does.
Right.
I will tell you, I think it's a huge breath of fresh air. What we're seeing with you know, Joe Biden. I mean, he's coming out with policies, and he's pushing things that the American people need. You know, this infrastructure plan of his is going to create, you know, countless jobs. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's actually, you know, trying to do the job of being president. I mean, the guy, he doesn't golf. You know, his weekend trips are to his home in Delaware, not costing us, the taxpayer, a fortune. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think that right now what we're seeing with Joe Biden is what we should have always saw, which is a president that is going to work every day for the American people. And I'm glad that we see it.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. And I think the other part of that, I mean, I think what you said it a second ago, is that it's a breath of fresh air, in that you're not always having to wonder and wait, what's the next crazy thing this guy is going to say or going to tweet, or how is he going to embarrass us next? You can harp all you want on him climbing up the airport or the plane stairs and all that. That I will take a tripping Joe Biden over a blundering Donald Trump any day. I will take a guy who is willing to do the job, not just do the job, but actually wants the job and everything that job entails, than somebody who just wants to act like president and just use the power that comes with the office. Joe Biden wants to be president. Donald Trump wanted the power that came with being president. He just didn't want the responsibility of it. And it showed in all of the things that he did that were contrary of what it meant to be the American leader. And I'm glad that the only thing that we have that we could laugh at or be even slightly embarrassed about, if you want to call it that, is how he walked up the stairs. But at least when he fell up the stairs, he didn't have toilet paper on his shoe when he did it.
And look, he fell down twice. He got back up. That's what I want. I want somebody who you trip, you fall down, you get back up, you keep moving forward. For me, it's that simple. Scott, you got a thought?
Yeah, he got back up and he saluted the troops. And he acted like it didn't happen. He brushed off his shoulder because that's what you have to do if you're the president of the United States. I think Kari said it's really what I think is really cool is we don't have to ask the same questions because Biden has no business interests. And so, like, you don't have to worry about, oh, well, is this going to benefit his business? Like, is this going to benefit him personally? Maybe in the long run, like, he might be able to sign a book deal because he's the president of the United States right now. But, like, it's not going to be, is he making money off this hotel? Is he getting bribed in this way? And so, like, not having to ask those questions is great. And taking credit, that's exactly how it needs to be, where job growth is, it's the American people. It's not just him. It's not about him. And I think that return to a new normalcy will make, again, put a spotlight on Republicans and how crazy they have been acting lately. And they just look crazier and crazier as Biden and his administration equalizes that new normal.
I think also he understands and knows what it means to be presidential. And I think he also wants the American people to see a president that is presidential, a president that is not scared to stand up for the American people, a president who is actually going to work every day for the American people. Mm-hmm. And I think a big reason for that is because what we have seen for the last four was absolutely unpresidential. And I think he wants everyone to know how important it is for whoever it is that sits in that role is doing the right thing and fulfilling that role with honor. And I think it's very important with what he's doing.
I'm right there with you. But are you I get a lot of conservatives whining and complaining that Joe Biden doesn't do enough press conferences, doesn't make enough speeches. Are we concerned by any of that?
No.
No.
70 plus days. How many days? I mean, like, we're talking about with no transition whatsoever, basically. We're talking about with an insurrection that hit. We're talking about, so that's that terrorist attack. You have him refusing to leave office at first and us having to fight for that, us having to impeach him for the whole thing. And that stalled the Senate because Moscow Mitch sat there in his graveyard and was like, we're not going to move anything. So why are we here? They were in power for a very long time. They are why we were here, period. There's a lot of other reasons, I'm sure. But like the main reason is because they've done nothing, the negligence. They want to blame him for the immigration crisis. Like, we're all to blame for the immigration crisis. Mm-hmm. Like, so let's solve some problems. Stop pointing fingers. Like, we can say Trump did this and this guy did this. That's great. We're here. This is what it is. This is the situation we're in. We can't fix it without them. And right. So we kind of need to get over it and face the fact that it's time to move on. Like, this is who our president is, man.
Go ahead,
Kerry.
So I think it's interesting that you have Republicans now, Joe Biden as president, that are complaining the frequency of press conferences. When how long did we go when Sarah Huckabee Sanders didn't give a press conference, or the third or fourth in line in the communication team didn't give a press conference? They didn't complain then. What's happening is because they have no real interest in government, in doing the work for the American people, that they are only trying to find things that they complain, that they can complain about Joe Biden. That's it. They want to hear him talk only so they can have something else to complain about. They don't want to make a difference. They don't want to find ways to make people's lives better. We are in the depths of a global pandemic. While these folks are telling you, hey, you know, you have people, American people at home who can't go to work because of this pandemic, you have rich Republicans saying, hey, we shouldn't give them any money, but yet at the same time complaining that Joe Biden's not giving a press conference. I don't need to hear from Joe Biden at a press conference. I need to see a result. I need to make sure that folks get that $1,400 check in their pocket. I need folks to have access to mental health care. I need folks to have access to opportunity. I don't give a damn about Joe Biden's press conference.
I'm right there with you.
It's something else, though, too. Also, there was no transition. And I think one of the main reasons why there was no transition is because President Trump didn't want to let Joe Biden know that there was no infrastructure for this global pandemic. You know, Joe Biden has been working his tail off to try to get everybody vaccinated, and he's been doing amazing accomplishments while doing that. So, yeah, that's it. That's how it is.
Yeah, for me, it's just about getting the work done. I don't need to hear from him. Just get the work done. And I look at this infrastructure plan. While, again, I can sit here and say, I wish it was bigger, I'm happy that we're at least moving in the direction of $2.5 trillion. We're going to invest in roads, bridges, all that stuff. But also the other part of it, the human infrastructure of our country. Let's start with the amount. Do we think it's enough?
So real quick, before we really get onto that, the last thing I want to say about the last part we talked about is Chris Rock has got a phrase that he would often say since the mid-90s is that you don't get credit for the, he would use S-H-I-T, you don't get credit for the things you're supposed to do.
Right.
Right. And so the fact that you don't have Joe Biden on TV constantly patting himself on the back or having a press conference where he's got his cabinet in a room where they're all just kissing his butt the whole time, we don't need that, right? Americans need to see action, and not just in the terms of getting the results that we're looking for, but we need to see presidential action so that we can have some semblance of normalcy, so that he can show an example of how you are supposed to lead, so that folks can take that behavior and mimic it back in their own communities, so you stop having people who think we need to storm the Capitol. When you put all of that together, you get a much better result, and you don't need a press conference to do it. Now, back to your question about the infrastructure and all that, I'm actually glad that it is finally Infrastructure Week, right? Where we can actually do some infrastructure type of work rather than having, whether it's going to be a conspiracy thing here or something else happening that way, they're actually trying to do the work. Now, I don't think you're going to ever get to a scenario where it is going to ever be enough. But it is a right step in the right direction, given that the Democrats who we do have may not outright support everything that Joe Biden and other folks might want to do. But I think it's a step in the right direction.
I'm with you. Scott, you got a thought?
You know, I always say that we can always do more. It's a good start. I think that negotiations, they'll be able to expand. They didn't want to present something that was a behemoth, I guess, because they just had the stimulus. So this is more of like a political play, I guess. That's my...
Yeah, but they've paid for it. I mean, and the good thing is he's talking about raising taxes on the very wealthy and on corporations, and we're going to pay for it. And so, you know, what's interesting to me is you had Republicans all during the Trump years saying, hey, let's have big, huge infrastructure plans, now coming out saying, no, we can't afford this, or no, these are liberal, it's a liberal dogma or a liberal wish list. It's crazy to me. Do you agree? Richard?
It's because they're the party of the double standard. You know, it's one thing in the military, we always say you can add to, but you can't take away. So if it's not enough, it's going to be, we can continue adding to it. We're talking about fixing over 10,000 crumbling bridges. You know, I mean, thousands upon thousands of miles of roads, you know, sea miles. For wind capability. I mean, to me, it's just great to see somebody who's trying to go in the right direction. We know that we need infrastructure in this country. And at least we're going in that direction. And like I said, you know, at the end, if we need more, then we'll get more. As long as he's willing to say that he's going to finally hold the people at the top, the corporations and the filthy rich, responsible so that they can start anteing up, I don't care how much it costs.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Let me ask you this, though. You got Joe Manchin in your state, who, in my view, should be saying, yes, we want to build West Virginia, let alone rebuild it. And he should be right in front fighting for the PRO Act, because West Virginia is home of the freaking UMWA.
Yes, I actually messaged Joe Manchin this morning, and I messaged him. I said, please tell me HR1 is going to pass. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, I think Joe Manchin is playing a role. I think that he is kind of thinking about potentially coming back to West Virginia after this term and running for governor, because he didn't finish out his second term. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's trying to kind of be, you know, Republican light right now, because our state happens to be so far to the right. But at the end of the day, I'll tell you right now, he knows I will absolutely scorch the earth around him if he doesn't do the right thing.
I don't want to be around that earth. Karee, you got any thoughts?
I am, you know, having run for Congress and, you know, run for a district that was the most conservative in Wisconsin, one of the most conservative in the country, have always been mindful of the fact that you are representing your district, not necessarily your party. So you have to do what's within the will of the people who are within the confines of your district. So there's part of me that wants to say that Joe Manchin is doing the will of the people of West Virginia. But I don't honestly think that is completely true. I think he is playing more politics than anything else. And I don't like to see that. I think he, in some ways, is developing an overinflated value of himself in terms of the fact that he could be like a swing vote and is trying to like really hype himself up when that's not really what folks are looking for of someone who is trying to hype themselves up rather than hype up the American people and our needs. So that is disheartening. But there are things that Joe has done over the years that I think are good and I think are worthy of admiration. But I think he also does some things that are very contrary to what the people of West Virginia probably need. And I think because he's trying to toe that line in between being a moderate Democrat and Republican light, that he is missing the point and that he could really have a chance of explaining things to the folks who don't have a lot of money in West Virginia or who might be in the Appalachian Mountains or who might be coal miners, right? So you go back to the Infrastructure Week, one of the key things that the infrastructure policy will do is address climate change. And when you deal with something like that, when you have a coal-rich state like West Virginia, you could actually help people get better trained jobs, help people get better health care,
yep.
Wean the state and the country off of dirty energy like that. But yet he's playing this game, and I think that is very disheartening.
Yeah.
Joe Scott, Manchin.
Scott, you got the last word here, 30 seconds.
Oh, no, did you want to see something about Manchin?
I just wanted to say Joe Manchin needs to show the people in West Virginia what a good Democrat can do. I don't care about the Republicans. If he comes back here and runs for governor and this state is Republican, he's going to be a governor in a state that is full of Republicans in the legislature, and it's just going to be a fight.
Yeah, I think that with Manchin, with me, I don't like the timing of it on both sides of it where it's clear politics when he's like dragging things out and wanting to negotiate things when he has the bottom line in front of him. So you don't know which side is actually playing the politics, whether or not it's the Democrats that are playing the politics of like using him so that Republicans can't act more important than they are.
Yep.
Or if they, so kind of like toes that line, but he's got to pick a side and
pick a side. There you go. I'm going to take a quick break right here. Guys, stick around. We're going to be right back after this break. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day 400,000 bituminous coal miners walked off the job in 26 states. They demanded higher wages, better health benefits, and safety regulations. The strike began to cripple industrial operations nationwide. By May 22nd, President Harry S. Truman seized the mines. Miners returned to work a week later. John L. Lewis, president of the United Mine Workers, signed an agreement with Secretary of the Interior Julius Krug. It included wage increases and vacation pay, the five-day work week, and contributions to a retirement fund. The strike led to the Promise of 1946, otherwise known as the Krug-Lewis Amendment. It created the UMWA Health and Retirement Funds. It is this fund that is often referred to in present-day discussions concerning the loss of retiree health and pension benefits. According to Robert Hartley and David Kenney, authors of Death Underground, the Centralia and West Frankfort mine disasters, the welfare program was to provide medical care, rehabilitation treatment, and death benefits. It provided the authority for the director of the U.S. Bureau of Mines to establish a federal mine safety code, to enforce mine safety regulations, and provided the first legal authority for federal inspectors to close mines found to be dangerous. Lack of enforcement would prove deadly for miners in Centralia and West Frankfort. The health and welfare funds, however, provided relief and security for miners for decades. But in recent years, many companies have gone out of business and found legal loopholes to shed their retirement responsibilities. Those miners affected are today fighting for the passage of the Miners Protection Act, which would provide access and funding to shore up the pension plan. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So another tragedy in our nation's capital. Another terrorist drove his car into a checkpoint, killed a police officer on Friday. Another one, I guess, not in good shape, but this is just another show of insanity in our capital. Also Friday, there were evidently gunfire near the Capitol, which had them shut the Capitol down. It's just nuts. And here to share some thoughts on, just what's happening in our nation's capital, I've got our panel, Scott Dworkin from the Democratic Coalition, Richard Ojeda from No Dems Left Behind, and our good friend Kari Pennybaker, treasurer of the DNC Black Caucus. Guys, you know, I look at this and it just seems like every day there's another one of these horror stories coming out of our nation's capital. We've had two Capitol policemen killed in the line of duty this year already. It's craziness. Let's start with you, Richard. Thoughts?
I think, you know, maybe it's time to start talking about, maybe a pay raise for these Capitol Police, because, I mean, they have been just, you know, drugged through the garden lately. The 100, over 150 of them were injured during the January 6th attack. Now we have this. It's a scary place to be right now. And it's a tough job right now to be in.
Absolutely. What's sad is that they had been used. The Capitol Police have been used as political pawns under Donald Trump. And it's really sad because at the end of the day, regardless of their job, they're still our fellow citizens. They're still fellow human beings. When you have two Capitol Police officers who complete suicide after the January 6th attack, plus the one that was killed there and the one that was killed today, you have to wonder, like, what are we doing to protect those who are supposed to protect the people that need to be protected? We're not doing enough to take care of these folks, both in security and with mental health care. I think it's a real shame that such little value had been placed on these folks. And I'm glad that Nancy Pelosi and other Democrats are trying to address the concern by having General Honorary there to address the Capitol security and things like that. And I'm sure he's going to come up with a plan that's holistic and is going to address all of that. But it's really a shame. And it's sad to see how far things have gone. And I hope it gets better soon.
Yeah, there shouldn't be an opportunity for this to happen. I don't care about the aesthetic, like what it feels like, the fence, if it's too imposing or whatever. Do what you got to do to protect the Capitol, okay? Because right. We're not there yet. It's not working. It's two police officers standing in between a barricade and then getting rammed by a car. And then a guy getting out with his knife like a crazy person. That's one person. This is just a lone wolf, it looks, you know, but then we have to think about, is it a diversion from something else? Then the entire DC area goes on lockdown. It slows traffic in Maryland, Virginia, and DC itself on a Friday afternoon. I mean, so it causes a lot of issues for millions of people. And that's one thing. But at the same time, like, I these people who are speaking out against it are the same people who supported the insurrectionists. So speaking out against heightened Capitol security. And so again, I don't care what they say, just keep them safe, okay? Keep the Capitol safe and make sure that, you know, I don't care if you have to have a gigantic barrier in between them, do what you have to do to keep these police officers safe.
No, I'm right there with you. But you know, one of the things that I look at is just how we've allowed a handful of crazy people to completely change our culture. And I don't want to see giant fences all over. I don't want to see barricades all over. But you're right. If that's the only way we can keep these folks safe, then we have to do it. But it's just a shame that in this, the freest country on hopefully the freest country on the planet, that we can't access our government buildings because of a handful of crazy people.
We have to also, you know, ensure and realize that that's probably the most important building on the face of the earth. And it needs to be protected. And I'm telling you right now, you know, it's no different than when we were in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, you know, you have to set up, you know, lines. And these are lines that you don't cross. And if you cross, there's going to be repercussions. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to see what we saw on January the 6th. And I will tell you right now, I wish they would draw a line and let anybody know that if you cross that line, you're going to be dealt with and it's going to be brutal.
That's what happened, and that's what happened during the insurrection. Is there was a red line, and Miss Babbitt crossed it, And yeah. and so like there was a restraint of force only because most of the Capitol police officers have military training and enough where they can not just use their weapon, not just use their sidearm. They don't just, so they've had combat experience. So they're lucky it was specifically that. But man, don't you think that like, I mean, it's a monument within a monument. It's a monument itself. It's got monuments inside of it. And they're worried about monuments and all this stuff. Again, like maybe it's going to be tough for people to, they have to go through a lot of security to get in, but you have to go through a lot of security to get in the White House. So if you want to go see it, then maybe you have to go through tougher security. But there's, you know, if someone want, the fact is, if someone, a lone wolf wants to kind of attack us, we really don't have that many defenses for it. And so we have to do what we can to prevent these things from happening and actually examine and figure out ways to do it, because this doesn't happen in every country. We have to think about that.
No, I mean, this is what's frustrating is I remember as a kid being able to go to the nation's capital and being able to walk right in. In fact, you know, we got a tour of the White House and didn't have to go through 400 measures of security that you could walk right up to the you know, right along the White House fence. And now we could drive right along that. And now we've had to do this because we've got domestic terrorists.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, we have, well, not we. There are some within the government that have fostered that sentiment of domestic terrorism and really have become the champions for those who are truly anti-American. When you are telling people that you need their help really to overthrow the government, essentially, because you don't like the outcome of a vote. And then, I mean, when you really put this in context, right, you look at the restraint that the Capitol Police issued on January 6th in response to all of those domestic terrorists. Imagine if that kind of restraint was issued on a daily basis to people of color in the streets. Imagine if that kind of restraint was issued to George Floyd as he lay on the ground for 9 minutes and with 26 seconds. Imagine if, you know, Sean Bell was given that same kind of restraint, or that Tamir Rice was given that same kind of restraint, or John Crawford III was given that same kind of restraint, but they aren't because they're black men. When you have large groups of white folks who have been brainwashed, part of them probably willingly so, into believing that their government is being taken over by somebody else and now they got to storm the Capitol, that's okay. They get to go home minus one person who got shot, right? Tamir Rice was a kid in Ohio where it's an open carry state with an airsoft pistol and was shot within 2 seconds of an officer arriving on site. Where was his restraint? Why do we have to keep coddling these domestic terrorists and making them believe that they have equal footing in our society? Why do they get access to the public square and Tamir Rice does not? How come? I would love someone to explain this to me. We tell the world, we sell this idea, we market to the world that we are the greatest country on earth, but yet we treat people as if they're not even second class, they're third or fourth class citizens. You could be shot on sight just because, but yet you can storm the Capitol. Maybe you'll get arrested, maybe you won't.
And you have the former president saying that, in fact, an exact quote from his conversation with one of the Fox News hosts, that on January 6th, there was zero threat. Right from the start, it was zero threat, he said. Some went in and they were hugging and kissing the police and guards. They had great relationships. A lot of people were waved in and they walked in and they walked out. And he says about what's happening to those people who just walked in and walked out. They're doing things to them. They're persecuting these people. They're persecuting. Now, I don't know what affection is in the Trump family, but stabbing someone with the flag and hitting them in the head with a fire extinguisher is not something that I consider affectionate. But it's interesting how they're trying to rewrite the history of that day that was just a couple of months ago.
And they're wanting, and they don't realize, and you know, we saw this. We watched what happened. Mm-hmm. You know, for him to come and say something like that, I mean, Donald Trump is clueless. And I hate that we continue having to talk about him because he's always in the news. But I mean, it's absolute garbage. I mean, I know we're getting ready to talk about, you know, the murder mm-hmm. of George Floyd. And you know, it's hard for anybody that is you know, of our color, you know, you, Rick, and Scott, and myself, to even grasp what it's like in their world, mm-hmm. you know. But what we saw with George Floyd, I'm telling you, and I keep saying this, until we tie police brutality to the police officer's retirement, they're never going to stop. Because you know what? Chauvin's going to go to prison, and he better go to prison. He damn well better go to prison. But Chauvin cost the city of Minneapolis $27 million in a lawsuit, not to mention the damage done after he murdered George Floyd. Until we start holding police officers accountable for what they do, it's never going to change. And I mean, it's only going to get worse. And it just amazes me how, I thought when President Obama won, and then when he won re-election, I thought we were beyond this. And Donald Trump showed us that we are far from it.
Right. Yeah, I'm right there with you. But, you know, today the story coming out of the trial is one of the lieutenants said that it was totally unnecessary what Chauvin did. And if you watch this trial, and I've watched as much as I can of it, there's no way I can see him being found not guilty. And I don't know how you could find him not guilty of the most serious charge. And I think there should have been more serious charges. Have you guys been paying attention to the trial?
He's been actually brought up on not charges, but 26 times before George Floyd, he's been known for police brutality and doing those things. So once again, that's it. That's the problem. Is it's always a slap on the wrist to the police officers.
Right. I do want to say real quick, I hope, while on one hand, I appreciate you all saying you expect these charges to stick and he's going to get arrested and go to jail. I would not have my hopes up for that. We are the same generation. All of us are old enough to remember Rodney King being beaten in the street on tape, right? Those officers got off, right? The majority of officers who commit these acts of violence, these heinous acts of violence against people of color, often get off. So I would be pleasantly surprised if he's charged. I would not be surprised, if he's actually arrested and goes to jail. I would not be surprised if he gets off. That's kind of the bar that America has set. I do find it interesting that you have the chief of police yesterday and the lieutenant today and several other people saying that the excessive force that was used was no longer required once once George had been handcuffed and was on the ground. You didn't need to keep doing that. But yet he continued to do so. And what's also striking about that is that there are four other officers involved who did nothing to help, right? Like, you are not your job. You are a human being first, right? There is no such thing as a blue life. They can take the uniform off, right? You can't take your black skin off. I'm stuck with this, right? But yet these four officers watched another officer with a knee in a man's neck that was unnecessary and brutal. They did nothing. Where was their humanity, right? And I think what causes this stuff to keep happening is that you have bad people who are in positions of power, whether they are in the police or in the legislature, who simply turn a blind eye. And then you have the police union who want to demonize the victim. We can all be Democrats and be pro-union, right? But there's still people who do the wrong thing when they have positions of power. And the police union has an exorbitant amount of power and influence, and they allow these things to happen. They should be the first ones to step up, because if you have one bad person doing those things, it does pollute the pool for the rest of you. I firmly believe that there are more good cops than bad cops, but until good cops start turning in and arresting those bad cops, they're all bad.
Nope, you're right.
They make it happen themselves.
No, in my neighborhood, everyone's got the "I support the police" signs in their front yard. And I said, I'll put one in my yard, but I want to amend it. I support the police when they don't do bad things, when they're not wrong. And I think that's a fair, where we should be. We want to support our police, but when they screw up, you got to hold them accountable like anybody else.
I want them to protect and serve everybody, mm-hmm. not just the people that are the same color they are.
Right. Absolutely. Right.
Scott, you going to jump in?
You know, I box. I have done martial arts for years. And when you have two men and George Floyd, two police officers that are armed, and then two others on the sidelines. I think there are four total. I know there's that one guy that was standing to the side. Mm-hmm. There's no reason for you to have it on his neck, like, at all. Like, there's no reason for you to actually use that force. The only reason you use that force is to kill someone. Like, that is the only reason in self-defense. Like, you don't put yourself in positions where, if you're going to do something that has lethal intentions whatsoever, even punching someone in the face, mm-hmm. can kill someone. So, like, you better be ready for that. That has to be your intent. And so you have to wonder, like, he knew where it was. He knew he was stopping to breathe. He knew all of this. And he wasn't even moving. And so it just didn't make any sense. Now, with they brought up some great points about just privilege and not being able to understand. I mean, I've been in the car with one of my friends, he's black, and we're driving, and I think I was speeding like 9 miles an hour over the speed limit, get pulled over. I roll down the window and I immediately start screaming at the police officer. I'm like, what the F are you doing? I wasn't even speeding that fast. Who is your commanding officer? He gave me his number. He looked shaken and scared. And my friend was terrified to the right of me. I didn't even recognize what was going on here, but his hands were up here. And I'm just sitting here, just la, 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 la. And the cop basically gave me his card, went away. I called his supervisor. I filed a complaint. I drove away with no ticket. And like, these are things that I didn't even comprehend. You have to really get into the front there. I've been at protests where I've separated people and it's accidentally like a police officer here and they look like they're going to hit, and then they look at me and I can tell them, stop. They're like, they just stop. And it feels like it's because I'm white. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they look at me, oh, my bad. You're not a person of color. So it's just like, there's really mindset and there's not enough training done. There's people that have guns who shouldn't, police officers who have guns that shouldn't. There should be some kind of time period where you're trained into it, where you shouldn't have these lethal weapons on you. And at the same time, there should be a better system in place. Like, you shouldn't, if it's a $20 counterfeit bill, you let it go. If you know where he lives and he's neighborhood guy, then you work on the arrest in an appropriate way. You don't have to have a public scene and kill somebody. That was murder. That's what it was. Obviously he had a past with Floyd. And so I just think that there should be no mercy on people like this. There should be no mercy on the bystanders, the police that sat by. They should have the maximum sentence. And that is the only way you have a deterrent to other police officers, so they don't do it again. And if you keep on getting no guilty, not guilty, not guilty, from the jurors, then we need to figure out how to have a better jury and educate the public about what's actually happening. I think social media is helping in that way, at least.
If our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and Syria have escalation of force and we are held accountable for our actions, then this is a man who lost his life over the potential $20 forged bill. Right. I mean, that right there is something that nobody can grasp. A man lost his life over the potential of a forged $20 bill. That's not, I mean, escalation of force.
And we're not even sure it was a forged $20 bill because the kid was on the stand.
The cashier said he'd spot the 20 bucks out of his paycheck. He even said, I don't, okay, if it's forgery or whatever, I'm not going to go after him. And then his boss made him go after him.
But I think it turned out to be not even forged.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we don't know 100% if it was right or not. But Scott, you brought up a point where you said that they're not trained. And I disagree. I think they're trained exactly to do this. You know, and one of the things that I remember as a kid
is not trained properly is what I'm saying. Sorry.
Well, they're trained to, when they arrest somebody, they're trained to slam people on the ground and immobilize them. There's no more put your hands on the car and put your hand behind your back. It's tackling them, slamming them to the ground, and in a gang taking care of them. I would argue they were trained to do exactly what he did. Maybe you guys will disagree with me, but I don't believe that this guy intentionally showed up to murder George Floyd. I believe that he was doing whatever he was doing and had no concern for his humanity. I don't believe that he intended to kill him. I believe he just had no humanity in him.
But I think that that's what's going on across this country, is we have a lot of people out there that have no humanity for people of color.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, though, to talk about training, every black parent has had the talk with their black child about how to behave when you get pulled over or you have an interaction with the police. So it's, we have that kind of training, and that's ingrained in us at a very early age. But it creates this real unfortunate dichotomy between people of color and the police, where we tend to be more afraid of police rather than being expected to be protected by them. And in Chauvin's case, I think he just failed to embody humanity, but he failed to see George Floyd's humanity. He failed to recognize that I am physically hurting and potentially killing another human being who simply does not deserve it. He's unarmed, he's already handcuffed, and there are several other people with knees on his body as well. We don't need another knee in his neck. I wish someone would have had a talk with Chauvin to explain to him what it means to be a person of color and just simply said, hey, this is another human being, not someone you need to be afraid of. And I think that while there might be training that exists within the police force that almost encourages excessive force, I think when you talk about things like defund the police, which I don't use the phrase, I think that's a, well, I don't use that phrase. I think what needs to happen is that you need to have better police responding. So police shouldn't be responding to every call. You should have mental health providers be able to respond when there's a mental health case, because in many situations, it is the police that causes the actual problem. There might be something festering, but the police make it infinitely worse and can make it a potentially deadly situation. And I think when you have an over presence of police and over reliance on police response, I think you constantly get things like this because you skip steps. You skip those kinds of training mechanisms that would enable someone to say, I don't need to do X, Y, and Z. But if you're so anxious to get police involved all the time, there's no way you can train enough people to be as responsive as people think they need to be.
It's an excellent point. Anybody else got a thought on this? The training angle? See, I think the training for me is this is what they've been trained to do, and you always hear them yelling and stop resisting, even though they aren't resisting, so that they can exert force and I think actually cause harm. I think that's part of it.
I think that sometimes I watched a video the other night, and it was a TikTok video, and it showed a cop and he was trying to handcuff a guy, and he just started punching him in the back of the head. The guy was face down on the ground and he started punching him. And then a guy come on and said, I'm going to tell you what happened. And he was telling him about how, what they do when they twist the handcuffs, because it makes it more painful for the person they're arresting. Sure. And then, you know, when the person on the ground starts to fidget because he's in pain, it gives the officer the look that, well, this guy's trying to resist, so I'm popping him a couple times. Right. And these are tactics that some bad police officers enjoy.
Right.
It's a horrible tragedy all the way around. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
It's a once-in-a-generation investment in America, unlike anything we've seen or done since we built the interstate highway system and the space race decades ago. In fact, it's the largest American jobs investment since World War II.
Green News Report special coverage. President Biden unveils sweeping American jobs plan to rebuild the nation's infrastructure and take on the climate crisis.
That special coverage straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Democrats want to sell this a $3 trillion infrastructure plan, which includes energy efficiency in buildings, 5G, rural broadband, retraining of workers, lots of stuff, roads, bridges, ports, rail lines, redoing the electrical grid, vehicle charging stations. It sounds very ambitious considering the last guy couldn't build a wall.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, at long last, finally, an infrastructure bill that you can be excited about.
Oh, definitely.
Calm down there.
President Joe Biden unveiled a sweeping infrastructure jobs plan in a speech in Pittsburgh on Wednesday. His American Jobs Plan proposes spending $2 trillion over 8 years to rebuild America's crumbling infrastructure, part of his Build Back Better pledge, a long list of projects that economists project would create millions of jobs in the short run and strengthen American global competitiveness in the long run. It would also begin to address accelerating climate impacts that already are costing Americans billions in damages every year and set the nation on the path to a net zero emissions economy by 2050. It is truly huge, with a 25-page White House fact sheet, but here's a broad overview. It would rebuild and update America's decaying physical infrastructure, repairing roads, bridges, ports, airports, railways, highways, schools, water systems, flood controls, and more, with a focus on climate resilience, modernize the electric power grid, and set a national clean electricity standard to phase out fossil fuels and reach 100% carbon-free electricity by 2035. Replace all lead water service lines.
Well, that sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and ensure all Americans have access to affordable broadband internet service. It would transform the nation's largest source of greenhouse gas emissions, our transportation system, away from fossil fuels by boosting domestic electric vehicle manufacturing, adoption, and investing in a national electric vehicle charging network by 2030. Use the power of the government purse to revive U.S. manufacturing and domestic supply chains by electrifying the entire federal vehicle fleet, and invest in advanced clean energy research and development to boost U.S. global competitiveness and productivity and counter China's moves to dominate the global clean tech market.
That sounds like a lot.
It is. It would also employ American workers to plug abandoned oil and gas wells and coal mines and ensure a just transition for fossil fuel communities. It would pay farmers to sequester carbon and restore soils, establish a civilian climate corps to employ people to restore landscapes and ecosystem services, clean up pollution, and prepare communities for resilience against coming global warming impacts. Biden would fund this infrastructure jobs plan by increasing taxes on corporations. Economists project the proposal will create millions of good-paying jobs across the country and would reduce the national debt.
Well, that's fine, but you're going to raise taxes on corporations?
Well, now it heads the meat grinder of Congress.
Uh-oh.
Biden said he welcomes Republican input, but Republicans have signaled they plan to block it as too expensive.
Of course.
But economists say that in general, every $1 spent on public investments like this returns roughly $2 in economic benefits. Now, scientists are warning ever more urgently that time is running out for us to act with the speed and scope necessary to curtail the worst consequences of man-made climate change. Biden's proposal establishes the groundwork for equitably decarbonizing the U.S. economy by 2050, a multi-generational challenge. Biden closed his speech in Pittsburgh with this.
Imagine what we can do. Imagine knowing that you're handing your children and grandchildren a country that will lead the world in producing clean energy technology and will need to address one of the biggest threats of our time. That's what we'll do. If we act now, in 50 years, people are going to look back and say, this was the moment that America won the future.
Imagine that. Now all we have to do is get the progressive Democrats who say this is not nearly enough and the conservative Democrats who say this is too expensive, and completely ignore the Republicans because they're not going to go along with anything. Other than that, get this through Congress, get this through the filibuster in the Senate, and everything will work out just fine.
Easy peasy.
For much more on that story and all of them that we couldn't cover today because of it, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, big announcement, Major League Baseball moving the All-Star Game out of Atlanta. looks like there's some repercussions for going back to Jim Crow type voting restrictions. And you got Delta, I think Delta came out. I think Coke's come out and said some things. The Heritage Foundation losing their ever-loving freaking mind that it's just the liberals going after good businesses because these are good reforms. Here to share some thoughts on, the good reforms. I've got our all-star panel, our good friend Kari Pennebaker, Rich Ojeda, and, of course, Scott Dworkin. Guys, what do you think? All-star game out of Georgia, good thing?
I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they're actually doing something about it. You know, it's like when somebody gets, killed in a gun shooting, all they want to do is say thoughts and prayers. You know, the Major League Baseball is actually doing something about it.
They absolutely are. And it's unfortunate that it's taking Major League Baseball to do something like that to get people's attention, where Republicans are reinforcing the idea that if voting wasn't so important, that Republicans wouldn't work so hard to keep us from doing it. They are doing these things to prevent more and more people from exercising their right to vote. All the while, they could be working just as hard as reinforcing the idea that you should be voting and enhancing those rights, but they don't want to. They don't want people to actually vote. They don't want people's voices to be added to the conversation. They want to steal that and then codify it into law. And it does sometimes take the corporate side of our country to stand up and say, hey, we're not going to help support that. The downside to this is that it's going to be all of those people who were counting on the financial benefit of having the All-Star Game participate in their state and in their city. So now you have businesses that are going to lose money, but that will inspire them to say, hey, our government is causing this to happen to us. It ain't black people. It ain't Major League Baseball's fault. It's the people that they continue to elect who simply don't value them. They want to choose not only who is voting, but who they get to vote for. Yeah. They want to create this kind of chaos amongst themselves where they only get to be the arbiters of the outcome. This also is a state where, Donald Trump tried to convince the Secretary of State and the governor to do something that was illegal. They should be going after that guy.
Yeah.
Not going after the people who are honest and just simply want to vote. There are people who fought, bled, and died for our rights to vote. But yet you have these people who are simply upset and unwilling to accept a fair outcome and now want to rig it so they can determine it for other people later on. These are the people who cloak themselves in freedom. Remember that.
Scott, you got a thought?
So the Republicans are super furious that there are consequences to passing racist voting laws. I mean, I would say that if they maybe repeal the law, then the Major League Baseball All-Star Game will stay. They talk about cancel culture when in reality, I think we're using this word now, is consequence culture, where the people who are actually doing the canceling is when they pass this slimy bill, that was the canceling. That's the person that's actually doing that. The consequence then comes after. And what this is that we're seeing, and we're still getting organized, we do not have our feet down yet, localizing the resistance. And what's going to happen is they're outnumbered in every way. And when we have our international push, especially on our national push, focused on one state at a time, they can't handle the pressure. Corporations can't handle the pressure. Nobody else can handle the pressure. You don't have the former guy to distract from everybody else. There's a lot of things that are going on there. We presented a plan to different corporations. We presented our boycott plan for them. We presented our boycott plan for Major League Baseball. We presented our for the Masters too. They kind of ignored us. All of a sudden we have Coca-Cola and Delta and everybody speaking out. Then you have Texas doing the same thing. That's great, but we also want to make sure that you freeze all donations to anybody who passed this law. What they're trying to do is they're trying to blame us for them doing something that should be illegal. And they're trying to make it so it's harder for people to vote because they can't win if everybody votes. And that's the bottom line, maybe because your ideas are stupid.
I think the best definition to me of cancel culture is Republican legislatures trying to cancel people's right to vote. Simple.
Yeah.
That's really what cancel culture is.
And you also got to know that every one of these bills has a lead sponsor. And nobody wants to have a legacy like that. And we need to find out every state that pushes these horrible voting, bills. We need to find their lead sponsor and make them famous for being the garbage that they are.
Yeah, guess who's investigating them? I'm investigating Republican leadership in every state that is passing these garbage laws, which is about half of the states.
That's what we like to hear. But what's got the most attention out of all of this that I think in our media is not that, you know, they're doing all of the, you know, the GOP wish list, but it's the fact that you can't hand out food while people are standing in line. And I'm like, that's the least of it. Maybe if you wrap it in one of those palm cards that the candidates hand out, can we do that then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the problem here is that they have no real interest in improving access to the polls. They want to do everything they can to discourage people from voting because they know that the fewer people that vote, the better chance they have because their policy is bad. They don't want people to testify to how good their policy is or how bad their policy is. They know they don't have the cheerleaders like we do. They know they can't create the benefit to a broader swath of people like we can. So the best way to do that is to reduce the amount of people that can go vote. And I think that says more about them, their character, and how lousy their policy is than anything else. And I think ultimately we have to get to a point as Democrats and stop equivocating on things. Stop trying to I don't want anyone to be mean-spirited or anything like that. That's not what I'm saying. We need to be able to call this what it is. This is theft. Right. This is the antithesis of being American when you're trying to steal someone's sacred right to vote. And we let them get away with it for far too long.
Yeah. And this is why we need H.R. 1 to pass. This is why you absolutely got to be on the phones calling representatives and senators and all that. Real quick. Last thoughts on H.R. 1. Do we get this through?
I hope so. Like I said, I messaged Joe Manchin and told him that I hoped it was going to pass. And he said he likes some of it and he hopes it goes through. So we'll see.
Scott?
Yeah, we'll get it to pass.
Kareem?
I have my fingers crossed, man.
Yeah, I do as well. It is one of these things, again, that we've got to demand. And, I had Congressman Andy Levin on the show last night, and he said, look, we've got to force them. We've got to do like past generations have done and push Joe Biden and push the senators to do what we want them to do and to do the things that we want to do. Guys, I appreciate the time. Good talking with you, Scott, Rich, Kareem. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Blue.
Again, this is one of those moments where you've got to contact your representatives, contact them early, contact them often, and say, look, we got to get HR 1 done. We got to get this infrastructure plan put through, and we got to make sure that the PRO Act is in that infrastructure plan. So not only do we rebuild our country, but we rebuild the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization. Just some of my thoughts. I'd love to hear yours. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Again, early, often, call, contact them. It's what we need to be doing to make sure that we move forward. Because look, I've said this before. If we don't get this infrastructure plan pushed through, if this doesn't happen, the Democrats are going to get slaughtered in 2022. And the Republicans, they know it. So if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go, wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.